Your speaker on this program is Brother Tom Holland.
The first moral philosopher once said, "Could I climb to the highest hill of Athens, I would lift up my voice and say, 'You Athenians, why do you turn and scrape every stone to gather wealth and give so little attention to your children, to whom one day you must leave it all?'" Rearing children in the latter part of the 20th century is probably about as demanding as any human endeavor. It has never been child play to rear children. Those of you who are older and reared your children in another era had your own particular challenges and problems. But the young people today who are trying to rear children have unique challenges and problems. And surely they need all of the encouragement and all the support they can get. When I look at so many of you that are young and you have your family started now and your little children are there and such a source of joy to your life, I know that one of these days when they hit the teenage period, you're going to understand what some of us have been through for the past several years. That it indeed is a most challenging and demanding endeavor of life. How do you handle a rebel son? See, this is David's problem, and David was a king. But problems with children may invade the king's palace, or they may dwell in the peasant's hut. There is simply no respecter of persons when it comes to the problems that we face in trying to rear our children. The background of this passage that was read from 2 Samuel chapter 18 is simply this. Absalom was such a rebellious son that he thought that he could take the kingdom away from his own father and that he, through rebellion, would become king himself. And he had such a following that finally his father had to flee Jerusalem. He fled barefoot, weeping, because of the circumstances that were overwhelming his soul. Eventually, there was a battle between the forces of David and the forces of his rebellious son, Absalom. And as Joab was leading the forces out to battle, David informed Joab and the other two generals, we will call them, that he wanted them to be very careful with the son, Absalom. Absalom had very long hair, and in the process of this battle, he started fleeing on his mule, and his hair was caught in the boughs of a tree, and he more or less was there suspended in a helpless position. And Joab learned about it and came and took three darts and thrust them through the heart of Absalom. And Absalom was buried in a pit in the wood of Ephraim, and his body covered with stones. There were two messengers that came to bear the news of the battle. Ahimaaz first came and he skirted the issue. But Cushai came, and when David asked him, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" he took the issue head on. "Would that all of your enemies were as this young man is." And the response of David would be the response of any father who loved his son. "Oh, Absalom, my son, Absalom." Five times in this lament, he calls this rebellious son, "my son." And finally he said, "Would to God that I had died for thee." In the question that this hurting father asks, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" is certainly a challenge to all parents in this audience and to all parents who later will be listening to this presentation. Are our young people safe? Any conscientious parent is concerned about that. We are concerned about the physical safety of young people. In this state, we have a law that says you must put a child in a safety restraint seat. And that's a good law. It probably has saved a lot of lives. The because many children in times of accident who did not have the restraint became a type of object or missile that could go into the windshield or that could go into the people who were in the front of that automobile, and not only would the child be seriously hurt, but other people would be seriously hurt. We're interested in the safety of our children. We have ecologists that are raising issues relative to whether or not our water is pure enough to drink. There are people vitally concerned about the air that we breathe, what is going into the foods that we eat. You see, all of these issues pertain to the physical health and safety, not only of older people, but certainly of our younger people. I'm going to be dealing with a different aspect of the safety of our young folks today. I will freely grant you up front that what David is concerned about here is the physical safety of his son. Is my son Absalom safe? Is he still alive? But in that question, there is a challenge posed to all parents. I'm going to take it first from this angle. Are our young people safe at home? Now, ideally, the answer to that would be, if there is any place on earth where the young people are going to be safe, you know it's going to be in the home. We have been told many times that the home can be a very dangerous place. We can use cleaning fluids that could be deadly to children. I recall a time we were visiting in a home, and one of our daughters, who at that time was probably 2.5 or 3 years old, found a very interesting thing under a sink. She managed to get a door open, and under that sink she found a little container that had some very interesting, she thought, I guess, food, but it happened to be rat poison. And when she was detected, she had a mouthful of that. And you can imagine the panic that resulted. Well, if you knew that you had some kind of deadly poison in your home, you wouldn't let that stay where a child could get a hold of it. Foolish indeed is the parent that will leave a gun loaded so that a child can get a hold of it. Because there are stories that come out in the newspaper frequently of children in homes who have killed other children with obviously those loaded guns. But there are some other dangers in the home. And some of these I'm going to be calling to your attention. I know that our young people really need help today, because about 1 million of them run away from home each year. That's the national average. When you look at the psychiatric hospitals, over 50% of the patients today in psychiatric hospitals in America are 21 and under. When you remember that every year approximately 2.5 million young people contract venereal disease. When you know that today a child that is born, your little baby, you new mothers, your little baby, if you look at the national average, has one chance in 50, or has a 50-50 chance rather, of being in a two-parent family when that little boy or girl reaches the age of 18. Now, these kinds of statistics make us wonder, is a child safe at home? Is a child safe in a home where one parent is irreligious? Where a father or a mother is not taking God seriously? Is not taking the Lord's church seriously. Gives every indication that they're far more interested in sports and recreation than they are in worshiping and serving God. Is a child safe in that home? Is a child safe in a home where a mother gives every indication that she's far more interested in material things than she is in that little boy or that little girl? Is that child safe? Is a child safe in a home of unattended TV? Well, here are some very interesting things. Here's an article that came out in USA Today back some time ago entitled, Parents Turn Off That TV. And according to this article, kids today are spending about 23 hours a week watching television. That means if they live to be to the age of 70, they will have spent 7 years of their life before the one-eyed monster. Not only that, but they watch an average of 14,000 sexual references, not counting commercials, a year. Now, you could break that down on a daily basis, and you see how many of those kinds of exposures they are facing. They view 2,000 beer and wine commercials a year. They watch an hour of MTV on weekdays and two on weekends if they have access. And about 75% of music videos have sexual themes and 50% have violence. A popular entertainer of children, whom we all would identify as Captain Kangaroo, who has programs airing on about 175 public TV stations, said, and I quote, "You can't use television as a substitute for parenting. You have to spend time with your child." There was a man about whom we read in the Old Testament, and he happened to be a priest. You read about him back in 1 Samuel. And in chapter 3, God told this man, Eli, that his family was coming to an end because his sons had made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. Solomon observed in the long ago, "He that loveth his child chasteneth him," or disciplines him, "often. But he that spares the rod hates his son." How does that work with children? Do children want to be, as we would say, footloose and fancy free? Are permissive parents the greatest friends of children? Parents who are so preoccupied with their own personal pursuits that they don't have the time and do not give the attention to their own children. Well, listen to this authority, Dr. Joyce Brothers, as quoted in Housekeeping Magazine back in 85. "Children of strict parents are generally happier, better adjusted, and higher achievers than children of permissive parents. They feel secure and loved, believing that their parents care about what they do and what they become. Children of permissive parents interpret their parents' attitude not as greater love, but as a lack of concern." When you think about the safety of our children in the home, you think about a lot of dangers that they face. Now think about the problems that children have from broken families. Some of you, in fact, quite a few of you, work in the metro school system. And so every school day you work with children from broken families. One teacher who's a member of this congregation told me a year or two ago that she had surveyed her class. I think these were either kindergarten or first grade people. 20 students, not of one of whom had both parents living at home. So we run into all kinds of difficulties. We see, for instance, that if there are not proper role models, and if the television becomes the role model, then you can expect all kinds of problems to come from that. Here are people who are watching an average of 14,000 sexual references per year. Okay, and then you pick up something like U.S. News and World Report, June the 10th, 1991. One in five Americans loses his or her virginity before the age of 13. At least one-third of married men and women are having or have had an affair lasting on an average nearly a year. More than half of teenage girls are sexually active, up from 36% in 1973. 90% of college women were sexually active in 1989, the same as in 1975. 80% of boys were sexually active, up from 73% in 1979. So here is a danger posed by people who let television substitute for parenting. It is one of the sorriest substitutes that any parent today could possibly imagine. I have an article here from a gentleman who teaches at Miami University, Dr. Rio M. Christensen. I have no earthly idea what religious affiliation this man may have. He teaches in the political science department of that university. His article is entitled, Shame, Shame on the Entertainment Industry. And he simply is deploring what the entertainment industry has done and is doing to American society. He says the entertainment industry has long contended that its values only reflect those of the nation. This has never been true. Movies and TV have always given us a selective and usually distorted picture of America and its values. He says concerning the media, it has relaxed attitudes toward divorce and premarital and extramarital sex, and it played a prominent part in publicizing and promoting the so-called sexual revolution. It is comfortable with abortion, thinks homosexuality is as worthy of respect as heterosexuality, welcomes the use of barbaric language in its presentations, and has somewhat ambivalent views on violent entertainment, but typically defends it on the grounds this is consumer choice, end of quote. One of the problems that is plaguing this town is violence. Over 50 people have already been killed, murdered in Nashville in 1991. Over 50. We live in a culture that is baptizing itself in sexual permissiveness, that is wounding itself deeply with violence, and all of that poses a real danger for the Christian home. A study was done some time ago of 20,000 inmates in the Texas penal institution system. And here's what they discovered in that study. 50% of the inmate population came from a home in which a divorce had occurred. 15% were from homes in which one or both parents had died during the child's formative years. In 85% of the homes, there had been no deep religious commitment. The man who directed that system for a long time, George Beto, who is now a professor at Sam Houston State in Huntsville, says that the problems of crime, delinquency, etc., will never be greatly curbed until the homes of America do an about face. Folks, we've been sold a bill of goods. The entertainment industry has sold us out, and it's time for parents to recognize that. Children are not safe if they are glued to a substitute parent that is called a television set. There's a gentleman by the name of Dr. Darrell Heffert, who directs the Winnebago Mental Health Institute at Oshkosh, Wisconsin, famous today because of the air show. He says that the problems that our young people are facing are based upon the American fairy tale. A fairy tale with five themes. Number one, more possessions mean more happiness. Any of us caught in that trap? Number two, a person who does or produces more is more important. Number three, everyone must belong and identify with some larger group. Number four, perfect mental health means no problems. Five, a person is abnormal unless constantly happy. These kinds of themes are, to use the expression of one of the early students of the impact of television, the Canadian scholar Dr. Marshall McLuhan, these themes are burned into the brains of young people. And then they're going to become parents. And what's going to happen? I raise the question, are our young people safe at home? Every parent ought to look into his or her heart and ask, where am I in relationship to my God? Daddy or mother, do you realize that the studies show that when you have only one parent who is dedicated to the Lord and His church, the chance of a boy or girl reared in that situation, having a real love for God and for his son and a real appreciation for biblical values, becomes very, very slim. It's that serious. Now see, while the thing is happening to you, you may not realize it. While you are spending more time in recreation than you are in serving God, you may not appreciate it. You may not understand that your indifference toward a Sunday evening worship service or a Wednesday evening Bible study, that absolutely poses no problem. As long as I go on Sunday morning, everything is all right. It poses a problem to your children, I will guarantee you. And if your children see that you go to church and act one way and you come home and you act a different way, that poses a real problem. They see that inconsistency. Are our children safe at home? I'd like to raise another issue. Number two, are our children safe at school? Now, we all are introduced, and it happens right here in this town, with violence in the schools. It's very interesting to note a study that was done by George Will, and it's really a contrast in problems in schools 40 years ago and schools today. A little over 40 now. In the 1940s, a survey listed the top seven discipline problems in public schools: talking, chewing gum, making noise, running in the halls, getting out of line, wearing improper clothes, and not putting paper in the waste paper baskets. Those were problems back then. Now, here he lists the problems we face today in our public schools, and I might say in some of our private schools. A 19 survey lists these top seven: drug abuse, alcohol abuse, pregnancy, suicide, rape, robbery, and assault. Arson, gang warfare, and venereal disease are also rants. Now, folks, that happened in one generation. It's time to start asking, are our children safe at school? I am grateful for the members of the Creve Hall Church of Christ who are teaching school, because, folks, you have a tremendous opportunity. You have an opportunity to go into your classroom and demonstrate Christianity. I'm fully aware of certain legal restrictions upon you. One of the ironies of the day is this: you can go into a public school and blaspheme God's name, but you cannot hold it in reverence and prayer. That's a sad commentary on what we have let a bunch of humanists do to us. There is an acute need for you people who teach in the public school system to give those boys and girls a demonstration of what it means to be a Christian. You may not be able to talk about it, but you can certainly demonstrate it. Now, those of us who have been in state schools are well aware that there are people who seem to delight in their efforts to destroy Christian faith. I'm grateful to God that I was older when I decided to pursue higher education in a secular institution, in a state institution, because I went expecting to hear people ridicule the Bible, and they did. I went on guard. I expected people to try to convince me that there is no God, and they did. But I'm not surprised that when those kinds of people get a hold of the very young, that they can do a number on them. And brother, the number is being done on any number of our young people today. But I know many of us are involved in what is called Christian education. And the day has come when that question, is the young man Absalom safe, is just as pertinent. Just as pertinent. I wish that every member of this congregation could read the current issue of The Spiritual Sword. It deals with this very problem. Are our young people safe in our Christian schools? It is not written by a lot of people who are against these schools, but by people who have promoted them, who have been in them, who have sent their children to them and still send their children to them, but are understanding today that we've got some problems. in our so-called Christian schools. Brother Wood Collins has a tremendous article in here. J.E. Choate has a tremendous article in here. Billy Smith, who visited with us recently and is chairman of the Bible Department at Freed Hardeman, these are the kinds of people. Judge Allen Hires has two tremendous articles in here. Jimmy Allen, who for many years has taught at Harding University and who gained a lot of popularity holding some of these great meetings all over the country, has emphasized the danger and the possibility of young people in our Christian schools being led astray. He emphasizes that it is possible for us to have, as teachers in these Christian schools, a far-reaching influence, not only on young people, but also upon the church. Judge Hires made this observation: I believe in Christian education and have continually encouraged young people to attend such schools, and I also have encouraged their parents to send them. Yet, in all candor, there are certain trends and practices developing among Christian schools that causes grave concern even among loyal supporters and friends. It's time that those of us who are involved in Christian education understand children are not safe in some classes in Christian schools today. They just aren't. Because there are some teachers that, in my opinion, have no business being in Christian schools. A man who comes into a Christian school without believing that the Bible is the verbally inerrant Word of God has no business teaching my child or your child. A person who doesn't understand the distinctive nature of the Church of Christ has no business teaching my child or your child. That's the truth. I don't know what particular repercussions may come from this. That's the least of my concern. My greatest concern is this: are our young people safe? Are our young people safe in their pliable formative years, sitting at the feet of an individual who is wedded to human theology, a person who is indoctrinated with existentialism, who believes that Karl Barth is the real director of thought and life? Are our young people safe in those situations? Now, what these brethren recommend is that some parents do some pretty heavy checking and start standing up in opposition to administrators who are going to let these kinds of things go on. You see, the problem comes a lot of times when schools become somewhat independent. As long as Christian schools need the brethren, need their money, need their children, then they can listen to brethren. But when they become somewhat financially independent, they build huge endowments, they hold acres of land, and in some states, oil wells, they don't need the brethren. And they can go their own way. And the history of Christian education in this country is not a very good one. Do a little research. See what happened to many of the schools that our brethren built on sacrifice. I mean, teachers who taught at substandard salaries and were glad to do it because there was an ideal, there was a purpose. And for that purpose, they would sacrifice. And then the liberals come along, and they take all of those years of sacrifice, all of the buildings that were built by sacrifice, they just take them over. They are intelligent people, folks. They know what they're doing. If liberals have ever built a school from the ground floor, it's not to my knowledge. The pattern has been to simply take what others have struggled to build and they, in a sense, confiscate it. And there are administrators who let them do it. And there are parents who may not know what to do that let it happen. But if parents simply say to our children, we don't want you going to those schools. We'd a lot rather you go to a state school if it has a good, strong Bible chair. Because at least when you go to a state school, you know when you walk in that there are people that are going to be attacking your faith. You're at least going to have your guard up. It's unfair to an 18-year-old for him to come to a school with his guard down thinking that he's going to have his faith solidified when his faith is going to be attacked. It's unfair to the parents. It's dishonest to the parents. And it's unfair to young people. Are our young people safe? It's time to ask that question about our own Christian schools. I wish I had time to mention two other areas and discuss these. Since I don't have time, I'll just touch them. Are our young people safe at church? I wish I had time to explore that. A lot of things are happening in the Lord's church today. There are churches that are taking the tradition of spontaneous worship. That's an old tradition. But it seems new to a lot of people who've never been involved in it. And so they take that tradition and they have to substitute that for what they call the old traditional approach. They substitute one tradition for another tradition. Listen, back in the 70s or late 60s, I attended a church that had this spontaneous tradition approach. They didn't even know what they were going to do in worship till they got there. It's a very sorry approach to worship, frankly. Are we going to let the dignity of worshiping God be sold out to the entertainment crowd? You see, a person can come here and there's a structure to this worship. And there's a dignity to this worship. And for people who are at times with the entertainment mentality, it doesn't fly. They want something that is exciting. They want something that is stirring and uplifting. Why not? If they're going to spend 23 hours a week watching all this excitement on television, why don't you want the same thing when you come to church? Shall we sacrifice the dignity of worship to God on superficial hand clapping and carrying on? God forbid it. God forbid it. Are our children safe where they're going to church? What are they being taught in their Bible classes? Are they being taught to love God and to love His church and to love His Son? Or are they being taught that the Church of Christ is out of date? It's a, quote, dying fellowship? We're going to have to change and become modern? We're going to have to start entertaining people? Well, I'll tell you one thing. If you have to entertain the men, brother, you've got to entertain to keep the men. And I will confess, I don't have the resources, nor the inclination, nor the ability to compete with the entertainment world. I mean, when it comes to the Jimmy Swaggerts and Oral Roberts, I'm not in the ball game with those guys. I'll admit it. But I'll tell you one thing. I'm not about to get involved in entertainment and call that worship. Are our young people, number four, are they safe with their friends? All of you know 1 Corinthians 15:33, evil companionships corrupt good morals. That's still good scripture. And it's still so true. Our friends, I'm talking about our closest friends, they tend not just to reflect our values, brother, they tend to influence our values. Let me know who your very closest friends are. You've told me a lot about yourself, and you've told me where you're going in your life. What about the friends that your children make with the entertainment folks? That's a place for entertainment, but not in a worship service to God. What about the friends? Who are their heroes? People that love God? People that go to church and worship God? Are some of these people who try by dress and manner of life to say, we are the rebels, we are not going to be conventional, we're going to defy convention? You know, there's some people today, it seems that the only way they can get any kind of audience is to be just utterly ridiculous. As outlandish in their dress as they can be and as far out as they can be in their performance. Who are your friends, so far as your young people are concerned? Young ladies and gentlemen, I want to make an appeal to you. I love your hearts, love you dearly. Don't let a crowd of pagan rock star entertainers become your heroes. Repudiate them. I would beg you to do it. I would beg you, don't let a crowd of people who have no love for God, nor for this country, nor for His church, be your heroes. And I'm going to make an appeal to some young people in this audience. We have some young people in this audience, and one of them is not far from me, who has demonstrated that you can excel in athletics and still love the Lord and His church, and I admire this young man to the depth of my soul. I think he's got his head on straight. We need in this church a lot of you young people who will be leaders for the Lord and for His church. You can have a tremendous influence for good by simply demonstrating to your peers that you can love God and love His church and do right. I beg you, stand up as a young man or a young woman for the Lord and for His church, and don't be ashamed and don't be afraid. Sure, you're going to get a lot of criticism. There are going to be people that will ridicule you and condemn you, make fun of you, but stand up for the Lord and for His church. The question is the young man Absalom safe? Is your young Absalom safe? I could weep with David when I read this passage. Here's a man with a broken heart. Oh, if he'd only remembered that earlier, when this boy needed discipline. I mean, this boy had killed, or had his own brother killed, and you don't see much discipline because of that. If David had only known when he was getting himself involved in sin, how it would come out later, if he'd only known. And so here's the lament. Would to God that I had died for thee. I hope and pray that we'll raise the issue today because we love our young people. Are they safe? Are they safe in the home? Are they safe at school? Are they safe at church? And are they safe with their friends? After all, you're looking at the future elders when you look at our young people. You're looking at the future preachers. You're looking at the future deacons. You're looking at the future Bible school teachers. You're looking at the future judges. You're looking at the future doctors. You're looking at the future lawyers. You're looking at the future husbands. You're looking at the future wives. And the quality of life that the next generation will know depends to a great extent on the safety of our young Absaloms. I commend you parents who demonstrated the ability to rear your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I admire you. I would beg all of us to renew our determination to be what God would have us to be as parents and try to do what we can to safeguard the most precious treasure we have, our own sons and daughters. Now, fathers, let's get serious about it. You're not a child of God. Don't you think it's about time that you laid down your prejudice or your indifference or whatever is keeping you from becoming a child of God, first for the sake of your own soul and second for the sake of your children? Don't you think it's about time that you came to the Lord and you obey Him from your heart? And what about those who are not really dedicated to the Lord and to His church? Don't you think it's about time to come to the sense and come to the Savior? We'd urge you to do that today. May God help us to rescue our children from a world that would love to destroy their souls in hell and to do what we can to help them go to heaven so we can all be together. One sweet day.